Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, this is the Talk Back program. Once a week, no guest, just all the calls from all over the United States and Canada. You have an opportunity throughout the entire hour to call in. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'll share the latest on health and healing, giving you updates on garlic, magnesium, the dangers of high statin drugs. Also, our issues today, where are they now? The reporters who got everything wrong on Iraq, well, didn't go bad for them. Also, environmental issues, we still got a big drought out there and it's going to get worse. What does that mean for us? Also, from our environmental segment today, Niall Bowie has written a piece called The Trans-Pacific Partnership, Corporate Power Tool of the 1%. We'll explore that. Let's begin. We have a lot to share. I have just completed major photography on an important film on poverty. It's been almost 6 years in the making. Now it will go into post-production. While traveling throughout the United States, I have encountered so many people who are not only poor, but they're isolated. And frequently when you are poor, it creates isolation. Let me give you one example of this. I spoke with a mother of two teenagers. At one time, she was married to a banker and lived a upper middle class existence, a Tony home out on Long Island, and summer schools, no problem about shopping at the malls and going to gala events and supporting social activities. The husband and her divorced, and when the recession hit, he lost his job, and she had no support. She held on to their house, and it went underwater in the mortgage. She couldn't borrow against it. She had borrowed once against it, and that's what they were using to live off of for a couple of years. And then one day, she was told that she had to vacate her home. They were in a panic. They hadn't planned on this. And when she had no place to go, she traded in her SUV, got a large van, and then had a friend of hers outfit the van with fold-down cots that fold up in the daytime, fold down at night, put in a chest of drawers against the back so they could have their place to store their clothing. In effect, they made as good a situation as they could. Now, when I interviewed this woman, and you'll see this in the film, it was what happened to the children that and her that was rather remarkable. All the places she used to be invited stopped inviting her. No more socializing with people once they knew that she was no longer in a home. But her daughters, who had been very popular, had to keep the pretense that they still had a regular, normal life. And so the mother would drop them off at school, and then the mother would go and look for housework, and she would clean houses or apartments, do the laundry, do the shopping, and then they would take the food to a place where they could eat, and then she would find a place that they had enough money to go in and shower and have a room for the night. As a result, she said that many times they would go an entire week living just in the van and going to a soup kitchen. No one wanted to befriend them any longer from their previous group of friends. And one day, a young girl came up, 14 years old, and said, "Now you know what it's like, because when my father lost his job and we had to cut back on everything, you excluded me, and now you're being excluded." And they realized in that moment what kind of superficial life they'd been living, how materialistic it was, consumption and possessions. An awful lot of people who are poor are isolated. A lot of seniors are isolated. This is from the latest study on this. isolation, social isolation, increases death risk in older people. If you are over 52 and living far from friends and family, you should reconsider. A new study conducted has found that older people who live in social isolation have a 26% higher death risk over 7 years. They analyzed 6,500 people over 52. That's important because many times we have a lot of our day, a lot of our weekends, a lot of our work and activity based upon how we interrelate with other people. And we are becoming a highly social isolated society. But it also is true for younger people. And that's unfortunate. My suggestion is that if you are in circumstances where you're socially isolated, look at all the social activities that you could participate in that are offered in every community and town in the United States. I counseled a person this afternoon about this very topic, discussing the idea that she is going through a severe depression, and she also is shy. So I was suggesting things that she could do that would be, she's also a vegan. There are, in where she lives in Washington, D.C., there are folk dancing workshops, there's cooking workshops, there are volunteers showing up at animal shelters. As a result, there's a lot of places you can actually network and try to find people that you have something in common with, so you're sharing positive things, not just your sad circumstances. But I highly recommend reaching out, getting out of your comfort zone if you are in such a place, and having people that you can meet with on a regular basis. Interesting, our Natural Living and Running Walking Club met this morning. We had a great turnout, an enormous group, and each week for the next 4 weeks it'll build. And you're welcome to join us, meeting at 90th Street and 5th Avenue. That's 90th Street and 5th Avenue at 9 a.m. And we'll get you in shape, and you'll be able to either race, walk, run, or jog the New York City Marathon, no matter what your current condition. But it's also a way that people can be around other people that they have a lot in common. The mere fact you're trying to get in shape, the idea that you're more often than not going to be a vegetarian, not necessarily vegan, but you're making some changes in your life. And we have our own network of people. We've worked with over 30,000 people from this audience, and a lot of people have made friends, and they look forward to being able to train and work out together. So, socialize. It's important. Something else is important from our diet that we're not doing enough of in the United States, garlic. This is the latest on garlic and what it does, and this is published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. Garlic helps keep diabetic hearts healthy. Here's what it says from Margie King of Green Med Info. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in diabetics, who have 2 to 4 times the risk of death from heart disease as other people. In fact, heart disease accounts for 80% of all diabetic-related deaths. But the good news is that a simple kitchen staple, garlic, has significant potential for preventing cardiomyopathy, a common form of heart disease among diabetics. Cardiomyopathy inflames and weakens the heart muscle tissue. Studies have found that garlic might protect against heart disease in the general population as well as help control abnormally high blood sugar levels in diabetics. And that's the latest study on garlic. Now, for a lot of people, they'll say, well, I don't think about putting garlic in a lot of things, and or I don't have the time, or I don't like the way it tastes afterwards. Then simply take garlic capsules. And the nice thing about garlic capsules is that they're now designed to either lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure, help stabilize heart arrhythmias. So you can take any one of 6 or 7 types of garlic. You won't taste it, any garlic or aftertaste, but it'll bring down your blood pressure, it'll bring down your blood sugar, and it will help kill parasites and viruses. It's all around good. So try to get garlic in whatever way you can into your system every day. Now, one thing we definitely need more of is magnesium. Magnesium helps with a lot of muscle relief. I always recommend, after a hard workout, take about 600-700 milligrams of magnesium from citrate. But it also is an anti-inflammatory. That means if you have arthritis, cancer, cataracts, if you have diabetes, all of those have inflammation as an important part of the condition. Magnesium can help you. This is the latest on this, and it's important, and I'm going to give you a little more in-depth on this. This is a study of 3,700 postmenopausal women, and they looked at the effect of magnesium and what it would do for them. And it had an enormous impact on inflammation in the women's bodies. It helped them with cardiovascular disease, inflammation in the joints. And remember, inflammation, especially in your blood, can increase what is called C-reactive protein and tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin 6. All of those are bad when they're elevated. They were all reduced when magnesium was taken. So it also decreases inflammation in the arterial walls, and that can help save your life. Now remember, the inflammation in the walls of the arteries can lead to cardiovascular disease. And when a person has inflammation one place in the body, you have it everywhere, and especially in the brain, and that can lead to Alzheimer's. So here's what you need to know about magnesium. Magnesium can help reverse osteoporosis, especially when taken in equal amounts with calcium. Also include boron at about 5 milligrams, manganese at 5 to 10 milligrams, silica at 100 milligrams, vitamin D3 at 2,000 units, and vitamin K at 1 milligram. Soy isoflavonoids at about 200 to 300 milligrams. And there are a lot of studies showing that magnesium helps reduce osteoporosis, but it also prevents cardiovascular disease. And it can help prevent a stroke. And it can also help if you have an abnormal heart rhythm. Because if you have a deficiency of magnesium, you can actually increase the risk of abnormal heart rhythm, which increases the complications after a heart attack. Therefore, consuming magnesium is crucial for you. It also helps regulate high blood pressure. And magnesium is important, along with fruits and vegetables, of course, and potassium, to lower your blood pressure. It also treats diabetes. It's one of the best nutrients you can take for diabetes. It aids in carbohydrate metabolism and influences the release and activity of insulin, thereby controlling blood sugar levels. I would say from low-end 300 to the high-end 600 milligrams for the average person. It also helps with migraines, insomnia, depression, and PMS. Now, for men, if you have arthritis, have a blood chemistry to check your testosterone, because new research shows that low testosterone is part of the development of rheumatoid arthritis in men, and that can easily be corrected by naturally balancing that. That was published in the Annals of Rheumatic Disease. Also, for those of you who are keen on tattoos, and it's very popular now, the latest study shows from the Canadian Medical Association Journal that you're increasing your risk of skin cancer. The inks used in tattoos can contain toxic elements, which can cause skin cancer, especially blue ink. And the age-old color of choice for tattoo artists is, which is generally blue, and they combine cobalt and aluminum. And red ink can also have mercurial sulfide, and certain colored inks often contain lead, cadmium, nickel, titanium, and other heavy metals. And also, you can end up with hepatitis B and C and infect your blood. So you really have to understand the complications. Now, a lot of people, the vast majority of people who have problems with cholesterol are taking statin drugs. I am not a supporter of statin drugs. I've seen the literature. I've read the studies. and also for those of us who understand natural ways of lowering the cholesterol, easy to do, polycosanol, reduced rice extract, garlic. It's not difficult. Vitamin C, all these do it. But if you're taking statins, a large study showed that that you could have kidney damage. That's the latest study on this, where they actually looked at what went wrong and found out it's the statins. And also, there is a sea vegetable. It's called kombu, K-O-M, kombu, B-U. And it's one of the best possible soups you can make for helping the immune system and giving you qi and energy. Kombu is kind of like a sea cabbage. It's called a seaweed, and generally it's just used as a flavor enhancer, but it should be used in a lot more abundant amounts because new research shows kombu can reduce blood cholesterol, it can reduce high blood pressure, it also is very rich in iodine, which is essential for thyroid functioning, it's a good source of natural iron, it helps carry oxygen to the cells. It's very, very rich in calcium, which we know helps your teeth and bones. Vitamin A and vitamin C helps your eyes and also helps with immune enhancement. It also is great if you have a problem eating beans and you end up being gaseous. When you use kombu with your beans, it creates a less gas-producing digestion. Kombu has enzymes that break down what is called the raffinose sugars in beans, which are the gas-producing culprits. And once they're broken down, you're able to absorb more of the nutrients, and you don't end up with gas. So kombu for less gas or no gas at all. There's no reason to have gas. You know, some people think it's completely normal after they eat to be bloated, gaseous, constipated. Not true. There's no reason to be bloated, gaseous at all, or to be constipated. And also, there's a new study out, and again, everything I cite always comes from mainstream research. This is from the Department of Obstetrics at the University Hospital in Messina, Italy, and it shows that supplements reduce the risk of diabetes in pregnancy. I'll quote this from Reuters. It says, a nutritional supplement called myo-inositol may help protect women at risk of gestational diabetes. Previous studies have shown that inositol supplements may help restore fertility in polycystic ovary syndrome, but this is the first evidence that it may reduce the number of cases of gestational diabetes, that's according to the lead author. Now, mind you, an awful lot of women are obese or overweight before they become pregnant. And women who are overweight or obese or have a family history of diabetes are at a greater risk of gestational diabetes. And that's about 10% of all pregnancies in America, according to the CDC. So what they did is they gave a group of women, 220 pregnant women who had a history of type 2 diabetes, 2 grams, that's 2,000 milligrams, of myo-inositol twice a day, along with a recommended amount of folic acid and recommended for all pregnant women. And so it was great. So that's the latest good study to help all the women who are pregnant, who may be overweight or have a history of diabetes or prediabetes, not end up with problems. This program is about solutions to our problems and keeping it focused upon empowerment. Back in a moment. And we're going to start taking your calls now, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, all over the United States and Canada. I don't know about Mexico. I don't know if you can use that number for Mexico, but if you're listening in Mexico, try it. Back in a moment. have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Now, we're going to go to your calls in just a moment, but I wanted to share this short piece from Niall Bowie. And we have this posted on the Progressive Radio Network. And by the way, I didn't know the numbers until yesterday. And anyone who's been emailing me, please don't take any issue that I haven't been able to return any emails. I haven't even looked at emails. I've been, since returning to the city, I've been absolutely packed with seeing people since I'm away, terminally ill people, and also we're editing three different major feature films, documentaries on social issues simultaneously. So I'm going throughout the day to our three different editing stations with the producers and the editors to work with them. And the only way I can do that is just sit there for hours on end. And so I have a backup of some 14,000 unaddressed emails, and I'm not even going to look at the emails for another week. So my suggestion is don't email me, because I won't be able to look at anything, won't be able to respond. But here is something that I thought was very important. But we do post articles, and every single day, 7 days a week, day, night, overnight, on progressive themes, 52 different areas. And we sometimes have as many as 100 different articles a day. That's more than the BBC. That's more than CNN. That's more than the Huffington Post. That's more than the New York Times. They have anywhere from 8 to 20. And we have double or triple that. Also, we post original in-depth articles almost daily. And I was told that we had, 13 or 14 million downloads. So a lot of people are coming to get their information. Starting within a week or two, we've just hired someone to do this, we're going to be putting up segments of documentaries that do not make it on into the final cut. For example, yesterday, one of my producers was stalled and had been stalled for a day because she said, "Gary, I don't have anything to cut. Everything is just good." But it was 5 hours long. The feature film's got to be an hour and a half. So I said, not to worry. We'll take everything that doesn't make it in, and we'll put it up on Gary Knoll TV. So we're going to have a whole new television program with over 300 original segments already done. I've been working on this now for 2 years, and we haven't shown any of this yet, and it's all coming within the next month. So we have a lot of good stuff coming. Anyhow, this is one of the articles that we posted, and it's very important because the Trans-Pacific Partnership is just, it'll be the final nail in the coffin. Let me tell you what this is going to do. Unions, it'll destroy all the unions in the United States. You have no idea the impact it's going to have. Environmental regulations to help our water, or our air, forget it. This will take precedence over state and federal laws. Want to keep a toxic pollutant out? You won't be able to. This is the big giveaway. This is the final push of those who have power to use it. And that's why I'm asking you to let your legislator know that you're opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We don't need it. And they're just trying to get the power of law on their side. Here's what he has to say, and we thank him for writing this. One of the least discussed and least reported issues is the Obama administration's efforts to bring the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement to the forefront. An oppressive U.S.-led free trade agreement currently being negotiated with several Pacific Rim countries. 600 U.S. corporate advisors have negotiated and had input into the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the proposed draft text has not been made available to the public, the press, or policymakers. The level of secrecy surrounding the agreements is unparalleled. Paramilitary teams scatter outside the premise of each round of discussions while helicopters loom overhead. Media outlets impose a near-total blackout of reportage on the subject, and U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, the chair of the Congressional Committee with jurisdiction over the Trans-Pacific Partnership, was denied access to the negotiation text. The majority of Congress is being kept in the dark as to the substance of the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations, while representatives of U.S. corporations like Halliburton, Chevron, Pharmarama, Comcast, and the Motion Picture Association of America are being consulted and made privy to details of the agreement. End quote. That was according to Congressman Wyden in a floor statement to Congress. In addition to the United States, the countries participating in the negotiations include Australia, Chile, Canada, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. Japan has expressed its desire to become a negotiating partner, but not yet join negotiation, partly due to public pressure to steer clear. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would impose punishing regulations that give multinational corporations unprecedented rights to demand United States taxpayer compensation for policies they think will undermine their expected future profits straight from the treasuries of participating nations. It would push the agenda of big pharma in the developing world to impose longer monopoly controls on drugs, drastically limiting access to affordable generic medications that people depend upon. The treaty would undermine food safety by limiting labeling and forcing countries like the United States to import food that fails to meet its national safety standards, in addition to banning Buy America or Buy Local preferences. According to leaked draft text, this treaty would also impose investor protections that incentivize offshoring of jobs through special benefits for companies that take American jobs offshore. The treaty stifles innovation by requiring internet service providers to police user activity and to treat small-scale individual downloads as large-scale for-profit violators. Most predictably, it would roll back regulations of finance capital predators on Wall Street by prohibiting bans on risky financial services and preventing signatory nations from exercising the ability to independently pursue monetary policy and issue capital controls. Signatories must permit the free flow of derivatives, currency speculation, and other manipulative financial instruments. The U.S.-led partnership, which seeks to impose shock and awe globalization, aims to abolish the accountability of multinational corporations to the governments of countries with which they trade by making signatory governments accountable to corporations for costs imposed by national laws and regulations, including health, safety, and environmental regulations. End quote. Just imagine this. Imagine that there is a food that is sprayed heavily, grown genetically, even sprayed with banned DDT. And we say, well, hold on, we banned DDT in 1972. They say, no, no, you've got to take everything we grow, no matter how dangerous it is, and you can't say no. So let's just say a state says no, then a judge, three-judge panel made up of lawyers for the multinational corporations will adjudicate and assess fines against the states or the federal government. How long do you think it's going to be with the financial predicament that states are in now to giving everything a green light because they could go bankrupt by fighting? This is the most criminal, vile piece of legislation I have ever seen in my life. And you can thank all the corporate Democrats and the faux liberals for not standing up. Then again, they don't stand up for anything that's of meaning and truth. We don't expect the corporate Republicans to do anything ever moral, ethical, smart, because they're a bunch of idiots. But at least I would have thought that when you're being smacked down and your rights violated, that you would stand up. Buy America. Won't be able to. Grow in America. Forget about it. Keep jobs in America, no more. So I guess if you're one of the Clinton or Obama fat cats and you're one of the CEOs of one of the NGOs and you live off the public dole, you'll love this legislation. For every other American, this is the kiss of death. This is the final kick in the teeth done in broad view, and not a single media has had the courage to take this issue on. We will keep on it because it's going to be bad to the bone. NAFTA will be a tickle on your back compared to the sledgehammer to your head that the Trans-Pacific Partnership represents. This is all corrupt, and everyone involved in it is corrupting our system, as if it could be any more corrupt than what it is. Back in a moment with your calls. Please stay with us. Our number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. Now it's time for Talk Back and your chance.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. Have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. We're gonna move it slow. When lights are low, when you move it slow, it sounds like a moan, and it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
Let's say hello to Godfrey from New Jersey. Hi, Godfrey.
Evening, Gary. I don't know if the name or the voice rings a bell, but I went to Paradise Gardens last year. I had a good time.
Turn off your radio, John. We're hearing it in the background.
I beg your pardon?
I can hear the music in the background, so turn off your sound. You got to turn it off, or I got to cut you off. We'll come back to you.
Okay.
When you call in, please have your audio off of the radio.
Okay.
Let's say hello to Anne from New Jersey. Hi, Anne.
First, thank you so much for making us aware of all these things like the Pacific. I really appreciate that. I have a question about what to do for a shin splint.
The best thing for shin splints is generally to increase the amount of magnesium, to do stretching, slow stretching with a foot going forward and massage down both sides of the bone, but not on the bone. To also put in about 2 quarts of Epsom salts into a warm but not hot bath and let your legs soak for about a half hour. Then I would increase the amount of DMG, dimethylglycine, trimethylglycine, both of which help relax the muscle along with the calcium and magnesium. Okay, all the best to you.
Okay, thank you so much.
And let's say hello to Rick from Ridgefield, New Jersey. Hi, Rick.
Rick from Ridgefield, New Jersey.
You're on the air.
Thank you, Gary, for taking my call. And I want to thank you for all you do. My question was, how can one be able to go through the school system without vaccination?
Right now, you have a right, a legal right, though frequently it is denied, or they tell you you don't have the right, but indeed you do, by having health exemption. For example, you cannot be immunizing anyone or vaccinating anyone if they have a compromised immune system. But there are a lot of different indicators physically, medically, that would exclude people, and yet they vaccinate everyone, giving them the same dose of vaccine. If you're a 60-pound kid or a 300-pound man, you're going to get the same vaccine. It's just in the entire vaccine science is corrupted. You will see all this in a new feature film that I am, in fact, we're just in the last 4 weeks of finishing before I premiere it. Also, you can ask for religious exemption. And if they deny you that right, then contact the vaccine lawyer, and you can find him on our website, and he will then file on your behalf. So you do have a right to exclusion. And also, I have posted an article on the complete lack of science behind the herd immunity. Oh, we have to vaccinate everyone, because if your kid comes to school and that kid hasn't been vaccinated, it can impact the others. Hello? Where did common sense and reason go? If the whole idea of being vaccinated is to protect you, then how could someone who's not vaccinated affect you if the vaccines are actually effective? Then that would call in the whole idea of efficacy. In point of fact, the majority of the people coming down with measles and the more severe case of measles are those kids who were vaccinated. Same with whooping cough, pertussis vaccine, and the same with mumps. So everything about vaccine science has to be challenged, and we're doing that. By the way, I was invited to give a lecture and debate between 300 doctors and myself on vaccines, and we have taken them up. I will be there, so it'll be an interesting discussion. It'll be 300 to 1, but in my world, truth on the side of one is still a majority. So I look forward to sharing with them. And hopefully my goal is to open some minds. And I'll be taking about 500 studies. I'll be taking outtakes of 47 of the world's leading immunologists, clips from my documentary to show them that what they believe is the truth of safety and efficacy is not true. And it's just going to be dispelling myths. So now we've got Godfrey back. Hi, Godfrey. We'll come back to you now.
I have this bowel condition, which first started off 2 years ago, bloating, stuffed up, and subsequently, when I tried to run, like do a sprint, I really couldn't move with the ease I used to have.
Okay.
It's been an ongoing thing.
All right, but let's just break it down. Bloating frequently comes from eating wrong combinations of food frequently, or having an impaired digestive system where you do not have adequate hydrochloric acid. I would suggest you get a Heidelberg test or another gastric absorbency test to determine, are you actually creating and secreting adequate hydrochloric acid? Then I would have a pH test done to determine, is the pH of this acid adequate to digest? Then you have to look at such things as, are you drinking before or during a meal, hot or cold? Not a good thing. Are you eating foods in the right combination? How are they prepared? Are they raw? Are they cooked? How cooked? Are they deep fried? A qualified person would go through each one of these and by the end determine in all likelihood what is causing it. Do you have an adequate amount of zinc, vitamin D? Both of those are essential for creating hydrochloric acid. And a lot of people are deficient in vitamin D. So if you're deficient in vitamin D, you may not be creating enough hydrochloric acid. Do you have enough intrinsic factor? If you're deficient in an intrinsic factor, that can adversely affect digestion as well. Then you have to look at correcting how you're eating, what you're eating, the amount of food you're eating, and what combination you're eating. And then, and only then, do you look at supplementing with proteolytic enzymes, with catalase, amylase, lipase, papaya, and pineapple. But that would be the last part of it, not the first part. Okay? All the best to you, Godfrey. And let's say hello to Matt from New Jersey. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I heard clicking. Gary, I was doing some research on chronic fatigue, and I found some articles speaking about parasites and contributing to chronic fatigue and how you can eliminate the parasites using papaya seeds. And I wanted to know, number one, is it true? They're talking about using the papaya seeds for about 7 days. And can you hurt yourself if you don't have a parasite? And also, is it more effective to use the seeds than garlic?
Well, I have not heard of papaya seeds, but then again, there are cultures that use the seeds in ways we do not. They use the coconut flesh and the coconut water and the coconut oil before we did, and they were right about it being important to turn off inflammation in the brain, to help your hair. I just, before I came in, I took a shampoo, and then I massaged coconut oil through my scalp and hair because it really helps the scalp and helps the hair. We didn't know that until other cultures showed that to us. Those were originally the Polynesian cultures, but they also were doing the same thing in the Caribbean cultures. So I do not have any background on papaya seeds and parasites. The papaya seed, when ground, is very rich in digestive enzymes, though, and is used in the papaya juices and concentrates for digestion. Instead, I would look at wormwood, white willow bark, and some of the other known anti-parasitic agents. Caprylic acid is probably your single best. And that's why juicing the skin and seed of grapefruit and lemons and then diluting that with green apple juice or cabbage juice is terrific for getting rid of parasites. But you could try both and test for yourself. Okay? And the only way you'll know you have a side effect is if one day you find that you have a giant papaya growing in your ass. Then you'll know that you should have taken it. Otherwise, Matt, thanks for your call. Let's say hello, Luann Finessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. You never know what's going to come out of your mouth.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's going to come out of my mouth. Bad government. In fact, we only have bad government. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe New Jersey, the cesspool capital of the world when it comes to corrupt politicians. Oh, I'm sorry. They're jealous because New York had that title. Well, wait, California had that title. No, all states have that title. All little, you know, these crappy mayors are crappy. All politicians are sociopathic. You know, anybody who wants power over you or desires power over you is sick. But also, nothing our government doesn't do well. It just screws up everything. You just have to get close enough to see it. Once upon a time, the government had a vast scrapyard in the middle of a desert. So Congress said, someone may steal it at night. So they created a night watchman, posted and hired this guy for the job. Then Congress says, well, how does the watchman do his job without instruction? So they created a planning department and hired two people and one person to write the instructions and one person to do time studies. Then Congress said, how will we know the night watchman is doing the task correctly? So they created a quality control department and hired two people, one to do the studies and one was to write the reports. Then Congress said, how are these people going to get paid? So they created two positions, a timekeeper and a payroll officer, then hired two more people. Then Congress said, who will be accountable for all these people? So they created an administrative section and hired three people, an administrative officer, an assistant administrative officer, and a legal secretary. Then Congress says, we've had this command in operation for 1 year, and we're $918,000 over budget. We've got to cut. So they laid off the night watchman. So let that sink in slowly. All right? That's how our government operates. Okay?
So, I love it.
I mean, they can't do anything right. All right? All they do is just hire people, pad payrolls, and the people don't do anything that we pay their salaries to that's essential in most cases. Now, what was on your mind?
Well, one quick caveat to the vaccine exemption. Many of our vaccines are actually made with chick embryos, so if you can show that you're allergic to eggs, that's also a very good way to get out of getting a vaccine. Just an aside. I did get something from someone today. They sent me the front page of the New York Post. Now, I'm not an alcohol drinker anymore, but this is just another example of how rampant corruption is. A wine distributor donated more than $30,000 to State Senator Jeff Klein, who's a Democrat from the Bronx, who returned the favor by writing a bill that would benefit the company. But the proposed law also could raise the price of wine in the city for the charge. So, of course, your listeners are asking, what are your thoughts on this? Is this just another, just the same old, same old?
As long as the public remains uninformed about how legislation is created and who benefits from it, then they will not make this an issue. That's merely one tiny token example of people using their position of power to benefit those who financially support them. A larger issue is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. 300 of the most powerful multinational corporations have been meeting for over 35 years in secret, twice a year, and they meet with our state legislators. They sit down and by division, they give these legislators bills. They've written the bills. Now, who's written the bills? Well, it depends upon which industry wants their bill in place. If you want to deregulate, let's say gas hydrofracking, so that you by law in the state of Pennsylvania, if you get sick from gas hydrofracking, from drinking the water in your well or breathing the air, and your doctor diagnoses you with an environmental illness due to gas hydrofracking, the doctor and the patient cannot say that any of this was caused by gas hydrofracking to protect the industry. And now, how did that happen? That's actually a law. Like all the other hundreds of laws that are passed in states each year, the multinational corporations decide what is in their best interest. Then they get their legislators and they write the bills. They hand them to the legislator. They coach them on it. And then the legislator goes back to the state and then implements that bill, puts it into the process, generally with people, multiple people who support it. And then it becomes law. At no time, for example, when they're trying to mandate Gardasil in all 50 states for boys and girls, do they ever say, we met with the manufacturers of Alec, the pharmaceutical companies that make the vaccine, and that's why we're promoting it. If they did that, they would all be asked to leave office. There would be recount calls for every legislator. In point of fact, at least 90% of all legislators should be recalled. They're not fit to serve. We make the mistake of thinking it's only when someone gets caught on a, you know, on a wire that saying something that shows culpability or corruption. It's everything that happens that's actually legal, where they meet with someone from a multinational corporation, they do their bidding, they pass their laws, just like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, what do the state legislators get in return? Well, they could get jobs after they're out of the legislature, consulting. They could also get finance, campaign financing from the individual ALEC members. They're always getting something in return. Politicians are notorious for getting the most they can and exploiting their position. I believe all legislators should be recalled. The very idea that we have ethical, conscientious legislators with maybe a handful, and I mean only a handful, that would be it. At the state level, at the federal level, city council level, mayor level, I believe all politicians are corrupt. And that's why we have a country that will not spend a penny to help a homeowner bring the and force the banks to bring the cost of a mortgage down to the value of the property, and then forgive their interest rate. Instead, we bail out all the banks that are holding those mortgages and foreclosing on people and holding the credit card debt and suing people and creating debtors' prisons. We give them all the money, trillions and trillions of dollars, at zero interest, and the power then to create arbitrary courts that settle this, not in a regular court, but rather in, I'm not going to deal with that today, I'll deal with it in an upcoming program because I'm going to do a commentary on it, on binding arbitration. That whole system is corrupt. And I'll explain why, because it's been privatized. And all the rules in binding arbitration are guided by the corporations, not the individual. That's why they get it socked to them. So we have a completely corrupt, dysfunctional system. We just don't have the honesty to admit it because there would just be too many consequences. So we pretend that that when someone is caught, you know, taking money, which is legal, and then introducing legislation, and we go, oh my goodness. Well, all of our legislation is that way. Federal legislation, state legislation, and my brother Stephen has been fighting for 25 years on behalf of small businesses, people in the city, and he is saying that 75,000 small businesses have closed because the corruption of the landlords influencing the state and city politics and guidelines, and that's caused over 375,000 lost jobs. And yet nothing is being done to help those small businesses. That's the power of whoever has the money, whoever can get the vote, controls the outcome. So our entire system of creating laws is corrupt. The four private prison system, they're the ones sponsoring three strikes and you're out. They're the ones sponsoring longer periods because they get paid when you fill a jail cell. And they don't care how that jail cell is filled. And they're behind all of this effort to get more people arrested for more petty crimes that never before would they have been put in jail, to put them in jail. And all the public has to do is look. If you want to look for anything, you'll find it. The question is, do you have the courage to see the truth? And most people don't. So it doesn't surprise me. Now, why doesn't the Post and the New York Times, why don't they run an expose on Alec? Why don't they run an expose on the Business Roundtable? Why don't they run an expose on the real impact of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergs, the Trilateral Commission, on the corporate Democrats and the corporate Republicans? If you remember, I said that the only reason that Hillary Clinton would ever take Secretary of State is because it filled in her weak resume on foreign affairs so she could be the next president. And stupidly, she will, in the stupidity of her even thinking that she should be president after the disastrous presidency of her husband, these people are megalomaniacs. They're uncontrollable, and yet the average person not thinking will go ahead and vote for him. So that's where we're at. It's only when you become independent in mind and you look for the truth that you'll find it. Hope that answers your question, Luann.
Sure does.
Thank you. Back in a moment with our final go-round of, well, no, we're not even going to have time to go back in a moment. So I'll take one more call here at 888-874-4888. And I want to go to one thing here. This is a report from Peter Hart of FAIR.org. It says, where are they now, the reporters who got Iraq so wrong? Quote, 10 years ago, Colin Powell made the Bush administration's case for going to war against Iraq. Much what he said about Iraq's threats to the United States were false. But the media coverage gave the opposite impression, and most of the pundits and journalists who promoted the justifications for the war paid no price for their failures. As Fairness and Accuracy Reporting reported at the time, even before the Powell address, there were reasons to be skeptical of the administration's claims. On February 4, 2003, FAIR published Iraq's Hidden Weapons, From Allegation to Fact, which made the point that, quote, it has not been demonstrated that Iraq continues to hold unconventional weapons. FAIR criticized coverage like that of the New York Times, which asserted that, quote, nobody seriously expected Mr. Hussein to lead inspectors to a stash of illegal poisons or rockets or let a scientist tell all. As the FAIR release concluded, quote, the media convoy to the public, the media convey to the public the impression that the alleged banned weapons on which the Bush administration rests its case for war are known to exist and that the question is simply whether inspectors are skillful enough to find them. End quote. Well, Powell's address was instrumental in pushing a faulty media line on Iraq's weapons mass destruction further. That much was clear in the coverage right after his appearance in the United Nations. As FAIR documented on February 10th, quote, a failure of skepticism in Powell coverage. In Andrea Mitchell's report on NBC Nightly News, Powell's allegations became actual capabilities of the Iraqi military. Quote, from Andrea Mitchell, Powell played a tape of a Mirage jet retrofitted to spray simulated anthrax in a model of Iraq's unmanned drones capable of spraying chemical or germ weapons within the radius of at least 550 miles, end quote. Dan Rather introduced an interview with Powell on 60 Minutes, shifted from reporting allegations to describing allegations as facts. And yet it goes on to say that not a single reporter for any media afterwards came back and said, I'm sorry, I'm ashamed of myself and the rest of the American media. All of the people who were wrong about Iraq kept their jobs, continued to be respected, and yet every single major story, they got it wrong. And on this one, the consequences were massive. Destruction of life, property, cost to the American taxpayer, and yet no shame. And we're supposed to believe these people on anything else they say? Never. I don't watch these clowns. I wouldn't watch any of them because all they are barking lapdogs for those in power. Shame on Andrea Mitchell. Shame on all the media. These are just a bunch of pimps. They're pimping the message they're told to write and promote. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. My mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy,
boy,
boy, oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone.